Prince. We are going to start, Karina. Yeah. Excellent, thank you. All right. Welcome. Thank you very much for joining us here. My name is Onno Kluijt. I'm the chairperson of the Java Community Process. And together with Frank Sommers, your host for this ride. Let me quickly take you through the program for the next hour. I will ask my fellow panelists in a moment to sort of briefly introduce themselves so you get a better idea of who's here. Then Frank will help us into a discussion. And then the second part of the panel will be opportunity for you to ask questions. The session is being recorded. So when we get to the interactive part, there's a microphone that Max will bring around. So when you ask your question, if you could wait until the microphone arrives, that would be most appreciated. So with that, let us get underway. And if we perhaps start from left to right, and Pete, you can introduce yourself.
My name is Harpreet Jeeke. I'm with Nortel Networks. I'm a senior architect in Nortel, work on the IMS portfolio for Nortel. I've been with JCP for 4 months so far. Right? I'm replacing Bill Bourne, who used to sit on JCP on behalf of Nortel. We're Java evangelists. I'm also the leader for Nortel's Java Design Authority, and I'm responsible for overseeing the deployment of Java within Nortel holistically as a corporation.
Hani Suleyma. I'm a CTO for Mercury. I'm one of the two individual members on the executive committee. I was elected, was it about 6 months ago, I think, in the last round of elections. And my main focus, sort of area of expertise, is in the enterprise world. So I'm also a member in a number of the enterprise JSRs.
It's also a world-renowned blogger. My name is Gary Magnuson. I represent the Apache Software Foundation, the JCP, and I participate in a few projects at Apache, including Apache Harmony and Geronimo, and as my day job, I work for Intel.
Hi, I'm Graham Hamilton. I'm one of the architects for the Java platform at Sun. I've been in the JCP EC since it was formed. I'm currently involved in planning for future Java releases, particularly the Java SE 7 Dolphin release.
So my name is Frank Sommers, and I'm an editor with Artima Developer. It's a website for developers, mainly enterprise developers. It's artima.com, and I'll be your moderator this afternoon.
And my name is Asko Komsi. I work for Nokia, and I'm currently focusing on next generation mobile platforms, and Java actually plays a big role there. So another hat that I'm wearing is the MSA specification lead, and the goal of that naturally is to come up with the next generation Java platforms we can use in our handsets in the future.
I'm James Warden. I'm with Motorola, and I'm in the software architecture group and working on the Linux and Java platform. Motorola's representative for the EC, and currently working on MIDP3 as well.
I'm Mark Little. I'm JBoss Director of Standards. I've been involved with the JCP since 2000 through various companies like Bluestar and HP. And I'm responsible for ensuring we participate actively in lots of standards organizations, including JCP.
John Mulner, I'm with Sun Microsystems. I manage the product marketing team in Java ME, and I'm the ME EC rep for Sun, and I've also been an active member of the JSR 248 expert group.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Frank. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all for participating. I know that many of you have been involved with the JCP for many years. Some of you have just joined the JCP in certain capacities, either as members of expert groups or as members of the executive committee. For those of you who have participated in the JCP for a long time, I have the first question I'd like to ask relates to your experience that you learned in the JCP that you have somehow benefited from the outside the context of the JCP. In other words, you might be members of other communities as well, other technical expert groups. And my question to you is, how did you benefit from your JCP experience as members of those groups or those technical committees or organizations? Any takers for that question? Well,
I can start by saying I'm not on any other spec committee, so.
I think what I'm trying to get basically at is that the JCP has come really a very long way over the past couple of years. And it's not just the JCP's governance, but the way the JCP has worked in creating really workable and usable technical products. And what I'm trying to ask is whether the process that you've seen the JCP go through has actually had any impact on your contributions to other technical groups or in development of other kinds of technologies. For example, in telecommunications or in some other areas.
So in the past, like I said, I've been with JCP only for 4 months, but in the past we've been monitoring the sleep development and all those other specs within the JCP, which has drastically impacted our contributions to 3GPP and as well as Parley X-Script. So Parley X-Script being the defining standard for how the OSA gateways and all the stuff will work for the next generation networks. The work that we did in JCP has influenced the direction the Parley X has taken, primarily from adapting Java APIs and Java standards to be a de facto way of doing business in Parley world.
One of the unique aspects of the JCP that I can see as an outsider and as a member of the media as well is that it not only requires a specification but also an implementation that actually works and people can download and try out and use.
And that's exactly what I was trying to refer to, right? So the way Parley X has been influenced by Nortel at least, so JCP has this cool way of doing reference implementations and then providing a compatibility kit around TCK and all that stuff and a huge licensing structure for that TCK usage, right? That model is very beneficial for using the development TCK to just verify your product specifications, which is very critical in OSA kind of environment for external application servers to interact with yourself. But at the same time, providing reference implementations, which can provide as a base for future development. Right?
I've previously served in other standards groups, but not since I joined the JCP. But one thing I do like in the JCP is we have a lot of fairly active practitioners participating. So these are people who are actually using the technologies they're helping to create. That often leads to a very focused set of advice and input, because people are fairly passionate about how they want to use the technology. I actually like that aspect a lot. It's also something we have to be a little conscious of the risks of, as we often bring in the experts in a given technology area. I think we also have to have the humility to remember that we're designing specs for non-experts. So getting that balance is also an important part.
I'll get back in a second, but I'd like to follow up on that. What's the difference in designing specs for experts versus non-experts?
Well, I think experts can design good specs for everyone, but you have to consciously think that not everyone is interested in the most exotic corner cases. Most people are interested in making the simple cases work well. Mm-hmm. I think part of our job as experts is actually to try and make things simple for common use cases. And yes, as experts, we can also have fun and worry about the really obscure cases as well. It's making the simple cases really easy, I think, is the big challenge for an expert group.
Thanks, Graham.
Maybe I can give a view from an MSA perspective. MSA may be somewhat in a different position than some other JSRs. We have actually two JSRs that are being led by the same expert group. And I think that has been actually a kind of interesting experience. I think it's also a very good experience where we can actually focus on two kind of somewhat different type of technologies. One focusing more on low-end handsets and mass market handsets, and the other one focusing more on high-end handsets and more like dynamic environments. But we have the same expert group making sure that, you know, these platforms are backwards compatible and technologies are compatible in general. And I think that has been a kind of a good thing, at least from our perspective. But maybe adding to that, you know, how JCP and other standardization organizations work. So I think this is standardization, and I think it works the same way in many other standardization organizations as
in the JCP. So
is that because of the experience in the JCP, or it has always worked that way and the JCP was influenced by?
Well, I think standardization just works in a certain way. You have a group of companies coming together and trying to, you know, standardize something together, and it's in fact JCP works in a similar way than in OMA or some other place.
But how about the reference implementation requirement?
Well, that is that was already mentioned, so I didn't want to kind of get into that, but that is something different, yes.
Okay. To move on to our second question, you are also, many of you are members of other Java communities. So JCP was probably one of the oldest formal sort of Java communities where you have to really join and become a formal member, really. But now we have java.net, we have various communities that developed around different enterprise websites such as Artima.com or serverside.com. And I'd like to ask you your opinion about the JCP's relationship to some of these other communities, for example, Java.net or the JDK community that really is tasked with developing the JDK itself. How do you view the JCP's relationship, for example, to some of those organizations? Everybody points at you, right?
Yeah.
Well, right, so I come from a little bit different organization than Java.net. The Apache Software Foundation is a, as you're all aware, probably, is a nonprofit organization that hosts communities that build software and open source. We have a very large number of projects in and around Java, and they've been there for a long time. Some of, for example, there was the Jakarta project, was formed after JServe, which is an early servlet engine, and then when Sun open sourced Tomcat to Apache, we formed Jakarta around that and have had tremendous success with building both communities as well as Java software and open source. What's interesting is that we have a very good balance of things that people are inventing and implementations of specifications. And we're fairly good at getting the TCKs, passing the TCKs and distributing certified software. So it works with an environment that's mixed of both standards implementation as well as, I'm going to say non-standard, but sort of non-JCP implementations.
I would argue, actually, that in terms of JCP standards have carried far more weight than they do, than, you know, things that come out from a lot of the other communities, because it's a far more formalized standards body. But the relationship, it's an interesting relationship between JCP specifications and a lot of these sort of different communities, all of whom also interact with each other. And traditionally, I would say, in fact, that there's the other communities often sort of have, in the past, have been somewhat mystified by some aspects of the JCP, in that they felt that they didn't really know what went on in the JCP. They felt there wasn't enough transparency. Lately, though, that's changed a lot. Because now people feel that they can, you know, because the JCP has made a point of inviting people in, making sure that people are aware that anyone can join. There's no, you don't have to really meet any sort of requirements beyond being interested.
Plus, there's the process transparency.
Yes.
That's been added recently.
And the process, and people can see exactly how the JCP functions, how specs are formed. That they can join expert groups and so on. And that has, I think, positively influenced a lot of these other communities, in that some aspects of the, you know, the formalized process is now sort of leaking into all these other communities and projects as a result.
So I can give a little bit of an example of another organization that worked closely with the 248 expert group, and that's 3G Americas. And so, I mean, I think your question was how does the JCP or work with other groups, and in this particular case, the JCP, it serves a critical need, right? It's around compatibility and making sure that there is compatibility in the market. Other groups have different needs, and 3G Americas identified a need for requirements and consistency with handsets, but from a different angle. And they, as a group, came together and pulled together a requirements document. But that group of people weren't the experts in terms of how to create a specification and really be able to drive that consistency and compatibility. And that is where the JCP is actually quite good. And so there was a need for those two organizations to work closely together to mutually find a solution that worked both for 3G Americas as well as the 248 expert group.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, on top of that, not only did they not have the expertise for developing the specifications, but they didn't have the framework for the whole testing methodology. And it made sense for that to come in as part of JSR 248.
So is it the case, just to make sure I understand what you're saying, was that there was an additional, a non-JCP process to standardize some aspect of mobile technology, and that was then brought into the JCP as a JSR?
So I wouldn't say that it was that they came up with a specification, but more
requirements
so that the organization knew what it needed and wanted to drive compatibility, or better yet, I think that they would use the word consistency with implementations across handsets, and had a number of things that they really wanted to see happen. The two organizations worked closely together in providing information from 3G Americas to the 248 expert group, so those experts within that expert group could actually take those requirements and do something really useful with it, which is create a specification, create the clarifications necessary to meet the requirements of that other organization.
I see. Go ahead.
Did you have something?
No.
Okay. So naturally, yeah. So 3G Americas have naturally a kind of a specific regional focus. And it's very important that we get those requirements inside MSA. And actually then also through other MSA members, we also have requirements from all across the globe.
MSA being mobile?
mobile service architecture, yes, exactly. So we get requirements also from for instance, the APAC market and European market and so on through all our expert group members that operate in those markets. But 3G Americas is a very good example. It's actually a whole organization that's focusing on their own requirements.
To echo what people were saying, but from a slightly different perspective, one of the things I'm enjoying about things like the Mustang community is, as we're developing the spec, we're now able to make available early access implementations through these communities, and we get feedback about the spec as it's evolving. So a lot of end developers can now actually try out the technology while it's still being baked, and they sometimes give us very direct feedback about things that are or are not working. They're actually very valuable to an expert group, to people using the technology while it's still being developed and helping you refine it. So that gives a much broader set of people giving feedback than actually could be able to participate in the expert group full time.
So in that case, the relationship would be feedback that you receive from these communities. See, one of the things that you mentioned is the need for compatibility, or you mentioned consistency as another word for that. And indeed, one of the JCP's main objectives is to standardize, to really reach a standard and a sort of a compromise between various participants in the market. But another important element, in my opinion, is innovation. And the innovator, by definition, is not compatible. The innovator comes up with a brand new solution, a trailblazing revolutionary solution. And at some point, Java was one of these trailblazing revolutionary solutions. Yeah, the JCP's primary task is to standardize. To what extent do you think the JCP is doing a good job in balancing innovation and compatibility? But just to give you an example, or just to drill down the discussion a little bit further, so for instance, there are various ways, let's say, to persist an object in a persistence database. Indeed.
But looking at the
JCP-based specifications for enterprise Java, means one would imagine that there is really one way. And if I, as a developer, want to follow the standard, I would certainly want to follow the Java standard. And it's one of the things that you mentioned, that the JCP really provides these standards that people trust more than they would trust some open source projects, is persistence framework, perhaps. I just wanted to say that do you believe that by having the standard weighed on these various open source communities' efforts in solving these problems actually diminishes the encouragement for innovation, drive for innovation?
Well, there's definitely a trade-off here. I think often what we're looking for is to use ideas that we have seen work well. Mm-hmm. That, for example, EJB3.0 is in many ways a synthesis of ideas that have been proven to work from the GDO community, from TopLink, from Hibernate, from many others. So that role of letting wild things happen in the community, then figuring out which things have worked well, mm-hmm. and trying to create a standard out of them, is one of the important roles. And for example, an area like the Java language,
We want to use ideas that we're fairly confident will work. We don't treat the Java language as a research vehicle this year. But I think it's also important to try and stay fairly cutting edge. You can't wait 5 years for ideas to mature and sort them. This is a fairly fast-moving industry. You have to be able to pick up fairly recent ideas.
Could you mention a specific example in a case of the JDK where you have to find this trade-off or balance in the recent...
Annotations was a new language feature we added in Java SE5. It was consciously done as a bit of a risk. We had a lot of paper design drills that said annotations would simplify Java EE a lot. And we took that risk, and it's actually paid off. The technology came together the way we wanted to, but it was a conscious risk.
Is there anything that didn't pay off, as you look back?
I'll get myself in serious trouble.
Well, I think you're on the record, by the way.
Yeah, there are a lot of GSRs out there. I think some of us, consciously, in evaluating new GSRs, are willing to take risks. Mm-hmm. I'll vote for GSR positively, even though I'm not quite sure it'll work out. And some of them don't work out. And I won't name names.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Any comments on the issue of compatibility? Go ahead.
Well, about innovation, I have one comment on that. Actually, it depends where the innovation happens. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to happen inside JCP or inside the API. You look at the mobile space, and I guess being frank, I think most of these kind of features have been in the mobile handsets implemented in the native side for quite a while, and now we are getting the MSA offering also those same features to the developers. But I think now what is really happening through JCP is that the innovation will start happen among the developers, and they will come up with, I hope, really great applications, Java-based applications, and lots of, I see lots of innovation that can now take place, that we have a platform that will be on Motorola handsets and Nokia handsets and so on. So it doesn't necessarily always have to happen inside the API definition. Maybe that technology has been out there. We are just offering that now through Java to the developers where the innovation then happens.
Right. What
so
are some of the...
The large number of quantities, because you have a consistent platform to develop on, should help foster the innovation.
Right.
Because if you're a developer and there's only a few hundred handsets to develop for, that's a much less attractive situation than if you're developing for hundreds of millions. There's much more potential for making money off of the innovation, so you have more people interested in pursuing that innovation.
Right. I think also a sort of trend that exists. I think previously perhaps the JCP was in fact doing more sort of innovation than taking existing work and formalizing it. A number of the current GSRs are now based on work that's done by the community, sort of things that have become de facto standards. And EGV3 is a great example of that, where there's a great body of knowledge out there. There are a number of different vendors, all who turned out to be doing fairly similar things in their own proprietary ways. You know, some open source, some were commercial, but ultimately the technology was very similar. And the big sort of innovation in EGV3 is the fact that it wasn't let's just do it all sort of internally and then give out a new spec to the world. It was let's take the existing body of knowledge there and formalize it into a specification. And I think that's something, especially the community at large, it's a very sort of healthy thing to see, in that can have lots of experimentation, lots of let's try out different ideas, let's see what works, what doesn't. It's no big deal if a particular commercial product or open source project fails out in the wild. But once it's become established, once there's a certain critical mass, there should be an incentive then to bring it into the JCP, to formalize it, to make it a proper specification.
How do you view the Apache? What's the Apache take on that issue? There are just so many Apache projects that are used as sort of a de facto standard.
Well, historically there was one bump in that road. There was a logging platform called Log4j that was very popular, and that was a case where the JCP it wasn't quite the same way that it incorporated the technology for EJB3. So I think the JCP I don't want to say evolutionary step, but it's been a good to see this sort of harvesting from the best practices in both the open source and vendor communities.
Okay. Just to move on to a somewhat related question, to what extent do you believe that the umbrella JSR, so for those of you who are not familiar with the terminology, umbrella JSRs are Java specifications that incorporate typically other specifications in order to define a broader set of functionality. So for example, the Java Enterprise platform would be defined in an umbrella specification. And this specification would then subsume many other specifications addressing various technologies such as persistence, such as how to create the web pages from some objects and so forth. My question really is, looking at the work of the JCP in the past few years, I've seen that there has been a lot of effort in trying to coordinate work between various JSRs that would go into an umbrella JSR. To what extent do you feel that the umbrella JSR spec leads have sort of a controlling stake in how those sub-JSRs turn out? So, well,
I'll defer to others first.
Okay.
Oh, you don't want to take that.
I'll chime in.
I think it's clear they have a controlling stake in it. Let's call it.
Should I start?
I don't know. Okay, I think they have. I wouldn't
influence.
Say a controlling stake.
Influence.
They have influence.
Okay, we'll go first.
You know, they rightly so. They should have an influence because their goal is to make sure that the platform as a whole is a coherent entity. It's no good having all these. You know, like if you have a dozen JSRs that go into an umbrella specification. If they're not, if there's no real, they don't really communicate with all these JSRs to each other. So there needs to be a mechanism whereby someone's saying, okay, well, you're doing this, and there's five of you guys doing the same thing. There's clearly commonality here. None of the individual JSRs know this, but the umbrella JSR knows this, and it's then the role of the umbrella JSR spec lead to say, okay, we need to agree on a compromise that will apply to everyone because it makes the platform as a whole more coherent.
Yeah, and I think it one of the I think it's a nice factor of the JCP is that there is no board of architects, right? But when a role like that is needed, you have this mechanism of an umbrella JSR to have a coordinating group, the expert group for an umbrella JSR to do this. So I think it provides a nice balance of having that coordination, but without an overarching college of architects, if you will, for all of the activities.
I was smiling a little because certainly I've been in the role of spec lead for an umbrella JSR, and so have some of my colleagues. It often feels like pleading with the individual expert groups to please align, and often a given expert group will have some reason why they want to be different. These four other expert groups are doing it that way, but they want to do it this way. Mm-hmm. And trying to get everyone to align is much more a negotiation, and trying to get everyone to realize it's in our common interest to be aligned.
So I see. Do you have a follow-up question on that?
Just a comment on your question. So I'm leading MSA, which is, I guess I'm not sure if we can actually call it an umbrella JSR. I guess there are certain rules which JSRs can be called umbrella JSR. But it's a JSR basically where you put together, now it's like 16 different JSRs as a platform. At least from my perspective, that's really the value of the whole effort is to really now define a platform, as you said also, you know, define how these different APIs work together. That leads inside MSA, we have tried to be very open and talk to the component JSRs and make sure that, you know, when we, for instance, come up with the clarifications for component JSRs, we are totally open if the component JSR owners want to take those clarifications and implement those as part of their specification. So from our perspective, we don't have kind of that kind of control position. We do want to come up with a platform, and that's the goal for all the MSA expert members, expert group members. But that is the value of that. But I don't feel that, you know, we have like too much control per se. It's an industry effort, and we are all trying to kind of go towards the same goal.
I would actually argue that I would like more control to be given to spec leads of the umbrella specs, because often it's
you have a trade-off.
Like that idea.
Well, it has to be a trade-off.
Because yeah, it is a trade-off. But ultimately, there have been many issues, and I'm involved in the. I mean, I guess I'm biased since I am on the EE umbrella JSR, and there are a number of issues that arise throughout the development of the EE5 JSRs, where you know it needs to be a coordination between the EJB group and the web group and the JSF group and the like four or five different JSRs and. I've always asked, you know, well, they should align because it's more important to have a coherent message for the end user than to sort of optimize locally on each JSR. But unfortunately, Bill Shannon, the umbrella JSR spec lead, would say, well, you know, can't, you know, these guys need to be convinced and so on, and that we can't really force anything. We can just suggest and beg and plead, and that's
So do you want to say, comment on that?
I think Kenny is right. I mean, this is a community. There are expert groups in different areas, and you know, when you're in the role of being, especially for an umbrella, you have to persuade people. It's very difficult to, I'm not sure it would be appropriate to try and impose an answer. I agree, sometimes the begging and pleading can be tedious, but it is the right way to get there.
Yeah, I think my follow-up question actually relates to that, which is that I believe that a lot of developers would agree with this, that the coherence of the platform is very important. So when you develop a J2E application, you would want to make sure that all the pieces sort of fall in place, and the developer's experience is easy, and of course that means that tool makers can create tools that just really help developers tremendously. But on the other hand, that would also require sort of an overall Uber sort of design for the platform to achieve that sort of homogeneity. To what extent do you start an umbrella JSR, or a revision of an umbrella JSR with this broad vision in mind, and to what extent does it just evolve from the constituent JSRs?
I'm going to give you some comments.
Yeah.
Generally, I think when we as a community are trying to create like a new revision of Java SE or Java EE, we do try and come up with some themes, so some big things we're trying to achieve in the release, and then look at technologies that move those themes forward. For example, with Java EE 5, ease of development was the big theme, and that caused a whole bunch of technology pieces to be pulled into existence and pulled together. Mm-hmm. So we try and do that. But you also run into, this is a community, and there's all kinds of people with all kinds of things they think are important, and you have to accommodate that. So there tends to be the thematic movement in the GSR, and then there's just a lot of diverse opinions, and those have to be accommodated too.
Could you mention a specific example in one of the?
Ease of development was a very major theme in Java EE 5. In Java SE 5, monitoring and management was a big theme. You know, adding more ability to look into apps at deployment time.
Mm-hmm. You want to say something
about that? I think I actually really enjoy watching the jostling that sort of happens when an umbrella JSR is going to be formed, because there are lots of people who are interested in, you know, like specific JSRs that say, well, we'd like to be part of that now, because, you know, when you're part of an umbrella JSR, you become more sort of integral to the platform, and I think it's a compromise ultimately. Where on the one side, the umbrella JSR side, they say, this is these are the things we'd like. We'd like everyone to adhere to this particular theme and, you know, sort of the coherent overall view. From the individual JSR view, there's also the kind of, okay, well, do I want to be part of an umbrella? Don't I want to be part of an umbrella? How important am I going to be? And what am I prepared to change in order to accommodate the fact that I need to play nice with other people now? And I think that ultimately the compromise that's reached so far has been a pretty good one in all the umbrella cases.
So if I'm correct to understand what you're saying, is that it's really based on individual communication and leadership, essentially, to convince staff leads to confront the themes.
Yes, very much.
So how about in the mobile community? Is there any similar issue there?
Well, I think there's similar issues, but there's also, of course, differences, because there's probably more variations on the actual hardware platform in terms of variability. Different screen sizes, different UIs, those sorts of things. So a lot of things have to be balanced on what is accepted. So like in the case of JTWI or MSA, what JSRs come into it are pre-existing. So it's not being driven from the top down. We have looked at what exists in terms of JSRs and what make the most sense to group together to form a platform that will hit the broadest segment of the mobile space.
And you also have to remember that in the mobile space, we are kind of constantly living in this symbiosis between the handset manufacturers and operators, and that kind of also creates a certain kind of way to come up with these standards and certain way to kind of define what you need in the handset. So you have to be able to support the most important, for instance, operator, you know, business cases and other business cases that you have out there, and that kind of drives the selection of JSRs and also drives those individual JSRs and their further development.
Shall we perhaps sort of take a pause here and see if there's a question from you in the audience?
Don't be shy.
From Paris, I'm writing technical articles, and I don't know the GCP. Yesterday, Jonathan Schwartz exhorted all developers to join the GCP. How will you deal with that? Because you are 1,000 today. If tomorrow 3,000 new GCP members comes, will you have to reorganize? How will you deal with that new huge flow of GCP members?
Yeah, I appreciate it very. Sure. The question was, Jonathan gave quite a strong encouragement to Jonathan Schwartz in his keynote yesterday to the audience to join the JCP. And the question is, how would the JCP deal with such an influx of new members? The way I see it, I don't think it's necessarily interesting for every Java developer to be a member of the JCP. I think you could say that there are sort of two kinds of developers, those that are interested in what the plumbing looks like and helping create the plumbing, and those that want to build solutions on top of that. So I think the general encouragement to an audience like here at Java 1 that, well, you should look at the JCP and decide where you need to be a member, and part of that, I think, is important. And I think each developer will, and each company will decide what level of participation they will want to have, whether indeed they want to browse the specs and provide feedback on there, whether they want to be more actively involved in some ways.
Just to clarify, to browse the specs, you don't have to be a member of the JCP. Okay. So anybody can go to the JCP website and download the specifications or the JSIs. Next question.
Hugen Derman, State News, Belgium. Actually, picking up on his question, still it seems to me that if they ask to become member, and they do become member, and then I hear people saying it's nice to see people jostling, etc., for place, I was wondering how indeed, still at this moment, even asking for individual members, they will indeed play a significant, even an interesting part, because otherwise, why bother asking them if they were simply kind of figureheads or figurants in this whole part? And the second part, also, you mentioned all those other organizations, Java.net, etc. To what extent have they become member of GCP? And to what extent have you gone out and tried to bring them in to GCP organization? Is there a kind of formalization, indeed, with regard to how to collaborate with them? Because ultimately, it would seem to me that those would be more, perhaps, more interesting channels to get these individual developers into the GCP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll have a first step at it, and I'm wondering whether Hani, from his individual perspective of Kier, want to delve in as well. I think whether somebody joins as an individual member or joins as a company, the JCP works very much as many other sort of communities or societies, and that is sort of based on reputation and merits. So I think equally for a developer or for a company, when they speak up or provide feedback on a spec or want to join an expert group, it sort of a normal assessment goes on, and it's sort of, well, help me understand sort of what expertise you represent, what knowledge and time commitment you can bring to an effort. And I think then what you see is that those participants in the organization that are active, that provide qualified feedback, they will sort of bubble to the surface, if you will.
Actually, that's easier if you're a couple of hundred, and it becomes much more difficult if you're a couple of thousands.
I think the question might be rephrased, if you agree with me, is that does the JCP scale to large numbers of participants?
Well, I'm not. So if you look at communities like Java.net, they have, what's it, several hundred thousand members. The JCP currently has just over 1,000 members. I don't think that it is practical to assume that 500,000 developers will be personally motivated to help evolve the EJB spec. So I think that there's some natural filtering that just happens by itself about sort of the the developers that will want to be, or the companies that want to be active in a community like the GCP in setting the standards, versus those that want to be active in communities of efforts that sort of make use of the standard as a finished product.
Would you indeed you say in that case there's a difference between those who would become member of a GCP and those who would indeed be member of Java.net or whatever? Would you say there's a different kind of developer?
Yeah. I think there's a different kind of developers. I think also both communities, and I think that goes also for communities like Apache and what have you, each of us plays somewhat of a different role. There are sort of overlap in activities and interests that we do, but in the end, so we do fulfill different purposes in life.
People, if you look at the reasons that people join various communities, they are very different for JCP. Like if we take just an example, JCP and Java.net. Why would someone Java.net? Well, there's a project there that they're interested in. They want to subscribe to a mailing list. They want to just download it. They want to look at the source code. So it's a very, you know, very low barrier to entry, as it were. You need something small, a day, 2 days, you know, something you need to work with. You want to start your own project, for example, you join Java.net. JCP, however, if you join just as a member, then you know, that gives you access to, for example, you can vote in the JCP elections. Joining an expert group, on the other hand, is a much, much bigger investment, and there's a much higher barrier to entry, in that most developers, I think, will not want to do that, because it expects a lot of them. It's a big investment personally. It's even a big investment for a company, because you have to dedicate resources to it, towards furthering a spec. So, which is why JCP will always be much, much, much smaller than Java.net, or you know, any other organization like Java.net.
In that case, it almost begs the question, if you have become an individual member of
GCP... It almost begs the question, if you have become an individual member of the GCP, why?
One thing that you pointed out is you can vote. I mean, being able to...
That was the sole reason?
Being able to vote.
I think it's a good reason. To help select the executive committee every... Well, it's on a staggered basis.
And we also want technical experts who are coming at it more from a user of the technology perspective, as opposed to just the vendors who are the creators of the technology. So I think having individual experts who are willing to contribute time to GSRs is incredibly valuable, but it's quite hard to find people who are willing to spend the time to really impact a GSR. And they're very welcome when they do, but it is a big commitment.
And you can see it in a lot of the expert groups now, is that the expert groups, the spec lead will knows that this balance is very important. And so while they'll be, of course, you know, there'll be vendors, of course, on any given expert group, but there's a very active search by the spec leads who will go out and invite or, you know, make sure that they put, you know, make sure that the number of the expert group members are practitioners. There aren't vendors. There are people who are who have an expertise in this area in terms of users, in terms of people who interact with the technology, not just people who provide it or sell it on to others. And that it makes the expert groups very dynamic, and it doesn't skew the balance too much towards one side or the other.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the only thing I can say here is that, yeah, I think if you really want to work on plumbing, I think it's good to join JCP. Then there are these other organizations, like putting the blog for Nokia here. It's like for Nokia is supporting then developers on like more on the application development point of view, and we have like 2.5 million members in our for Nokia. A club, and if we can handle that many, I think JCP can handle that many.
May I comment on what you're asking? May the moderator comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I think one of the motivations for individual for joining would be if you're a developer, for example, as part of an open source community, and if you truly believe in that there's a certain way that you should be doing something. So, for example, you work with graphical user interfaces, and you have a little framework that you developed. And you truly believe that that's the way you're doing it is the way it should be done. But then there is an existing JSR that tries to solve a similar problem. You know that JSR will become the standard. So you probably want to have some kind of an input into that JSR at that point. And there's going to be a compromise. You know that your solution is not going to become the standard, but you want to have some input into that. So I think that for an individual, that's also possibly a motivation for joining even an expert group to provide feedback or to provide some input into what you believe that you're an expert in.
We have time for a couple more questions. Go ahead.
The other part, how about indeed Java.net, etc.? Those organizations becoming a member.
Well, so Java.net is not a self-standing entity, so I don't think really it is meaningful to say, well, Java.net should join the JCP. But you do see, though, there is a lot of sort of interconnection between the JCP and communities like Java.net and various others, that, for example, a lot of the expert groups work on the reference implementation as a project at Java.net, just like as with some of that, it happens also at the community like Apache. So there is a lot of sort of interconnection between the sort of various places where developers meet.
What's going to be the impact of if Java goes open source, when not Java goes open source, how's that going to impact the JSON?
I don't think there's an obvious impact, because currently open source is already sort of part of the JCP. Last year in June, Sun open sourced Java EE, and that from a JCP perspective didn't turn out to be very scary. Mm-hmm. So I think the system is in place to manage that.
And just as a quick add to that, you're already able to do implementations of reference implementation or TCK in open source already, right? So the infrastructure is there for JSRs to work that way if they so choose.
And people can even do open source implementations of Java SE themselves if you want.
And we can do that. Though some ask why we do that. So the question is not whether, but why.
Go ahead.
Will we have to pay for the TCK? Well, Apache is a qualified nonprofit, and as part of the changes of JCP's 2.5 process document, qualified nonprofits can get a TCK with no license fee. But we still will have to get the TCK. We still have to pass the TCK completely and satisfy that compatibility requirement.
I've already talked to you, Hani, about this, but I wanted to see if there's any kind of provisions or anything in the JCP to sort of prevent things like rubber stamping going on, like somebody brings you a spec, something that's already written and sort of goes through without much modification, just specifically for a specific vendor or something like that. Is there anything there to prevent that sort of thing from happening, or?
There's an executive committee with 16 members on it. And
no votes.
The executive committees do review new GSRs. Now, there are sometimes cases where there's some small thing and it's obvious and it can be moved through very quickly. And you know, there are some existing ideas that may be appropriate to rubber stamp. It would have to be a rubber stamp where a majority of the EC thought it was appropriate to do that. I'm actually not sure I've yet seen a case of that. Mm. So while it's theoretically possible, the EC tends to expect that a GSR expert group will have real decision-making power. And the ECs have been willing to express their opinions fairly clearly. And you know, a couple of GSRs have been voted down over the years, not many.
Do you receive a lot of submissions from companies that want to sort of standardize, in quotes, in quotation marks, their products or their technologies?
No, I think most, they may have initially such ideas, but I think once they sort of start to evaluate for themselves how it would work, I think most realize that that's not such a good idea. So I think it's sort of self-filtering.
From what I've seen, I think you're referring to a particular GSR which recently got approved, right? There was debate. There were email chains and discussions happening about it. There was no doubt about it, right? And we decided to vote for it. It was not that it didn't go through a vote. It did go through a vote, and we intentionally voted for it. So, like we said, like, we have a right to say either no or abstain from it, but we chose to. The reason for that is we believed in it.
Next question, please.
Sure, presentation.
Any further questions? Bill.
Bill Venners from Artima, and my question was about the future. To me, it seems like the JCP has really come a long way and is a very vibrant community making great standards, but what's missing? What could be improved? What's the future hold for the JCP?
gentlemen, I think
that's
well,
you asked my last
all.
Concluding question. But, well, why doesn't each of you take a stand at that, perhaps? Because you're all a part of this.
Can
so
we abstain?
No.
let me start from telecom perspective. It's a very important standards body, right? There's a value which GCP provides by standardizing GSRs and standard interfaces for telecom development. It's extremely important. Java is getting popularity, and if you do not have these standardized interfaces, it ain't going to go away. You will end up with proprietary solutions. So as far as I'm concerned, JCP has a great future. Right? It is the de facto standards body for JCP.
What would you change that to improve it further?
There's always room for improvement. Okay. Right? So basically how we communicate with each other. Like I said, I've been only in the community for 4 months. Like mm-hmm. The communication and all the dialogues which happen, maybe there's a better way for us to do that. But so far, it has been very productive from what I've seen.
Say a few words about that.
I would. One thing that is actually changing is not so much on the whole process, but in terms of how individual JSRs work. I would like for there to be more transparency to the goings-on of the JSR. As someone external, because there's often cases where you look at the JSR and you think, that's interesting. What's happening there? You're not in the expert group. You're an outside observer, but it's something that could be relevant to you. And right now, it's a matter of luck whether the JSR happens to be run in a fairly public manner, where there's regular status updates on someone's personal blog, if you're lucky, or there's just been radio silence for the last year and you're not sure. Are they working? Are they about to release something? What's happening? And I think there's lots of infrastructure changes that are happening to enable that and to encourage individual JSRs to be more transparent, give them more resources to communicate their messages better, I think. And that's one thing that I think will be a great improvement that's hopefully happening soon.
Which is pretty much what you get from me is, and I see it as a continuation of a process that's already started, is, of course, at Apache, we do believe in the open, transparent process that Apache projects follow, and we're starting to see this happen with JCP expert groups. By choice, right? The groups can choose to work this way. And this provides that sort of transparency that outsiders who are not a part of the expert group can follow along and watch. And another trend that we like and we'd like to see continue is some of these early access implementations or the what's the right word for the spec?
Snapshots.
Well, basically...
Early draft?
The early draft. So producing software, expert groups producing the RIs as they're on their way to becoming an RI, so that the community can take them and touch them and work with them and try them and tell them what works and what doesn't, which I think...
Yeah. I agree.
I think you work with a fairly open group.
I guess one of my concerns is that it's natural in the evolution of organizations to become more rules-focused. I actually hope we continue to stay flexible. You know, the purpose of the process is to facilitate the expert groups to create great specifications. I think we need to keep an eye on making sure we are facilitating the work of the expert groups, not trying to over-control or turn spec leads into people who have to do a lot of paperwork. I want spec leads to be highly technical and to minimize the paperwork side, which isn't really a problem yet, but I think something as a group we have to keep an eye on.
Okay.
So I agree with the transparency comment. Know better what's happening inside these JSRs, and also more transparency in who can actually join these expert groups. Another thing might be, you talked about J2EE and open sourcing that. Why don't we do the same with the J2ME side too? And finally, maybe you were talking about being flexible, but I also think that JCP could improve the processes, and I just faced the one of the problems with my specification that was supposed to come out like 2 weeks ago, but today finally it came out. So maybe more focus on the processes and making sure that, you know, at least these basic things work the way they are supposed to work.
Well, it's kind of been stated over and over, but I think there are improvements yet to be made in openness and transparency inside the JCP. And as Motorola announced on Monday, we intend to open source our RIs and TZKs for JSRs going forward, and that will start with MIDP. And if the MIDP expert group decides to work in an open way, which will be decided by the expert group, then we will have that group working in the open as well. So that's pretty much it.
The thing I could probably add is that we heard that the JCP is all about, one of the aspects is freedom. There's a lot of freedom for people to do what they want, but sometimes, certainly from my experience, there's too much freedom and maybe a little bit more control. Like for some things, GSRs can just run and run and run and run and run. So it would be nice if there was some more control from top down rather than just from bottom up.
Mm-hmm. Any comments to that?
Well, it's tough going at the end here.
Just repeat what you said.
Bit of what everybody says. I think that there are some tools that are coming from the JCP. Hopefully, I'm not overstepping my bounds and saying that, but I'm really looking forward to moving forward in the future of the collaboration type tools that will be available to help both the expert groups, spec leads, and individual members of the community to be able to participate more in the process. And granted that the spec lead is going to be able to decide at how open they want to be, but those tools should exist to enable that, which I think is going to be really helpful moving forward.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that's all the time we have for questions for today.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Frank, for helping us with the panel discussion. There's a reception here following, so if you have time to stay with us, you're most welcome, and perhaps ask some of your questions sort of one-on-one from the participants here. If you need to go on to other things, it's always a very busy week, then certainly thank you for your presence here, and we'll see you elsewhere in Moscone or this hotel. Thank you very much.
Just one more comment, Krenand, which is that we'll have a write-up about this panel on Artima.com, so please go to the site and you will see some more information about Artima.com.
Two more things here before we move on to the last part.